This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Friday today. I actually have had a long week this week. We had we call them big rocks falling from the sky. We had a big rock falling from the sky this week. There was a project that needed a little extra help, and I got in on Monday morning, and my immediate superior at the client where I'm working called me in. He said, I got something I need to talk to you about. I'm trying to keep from having an accident here. Got something I need to talk to you about. I said, okay, that's fine. So before it was all said and done, I got spun off onto another project for the entire week. So we have just been plowing along, trying to get a data map up and figure out how we were going to move data from one place to another. But thank God we made some good progress on it. And I think we're ready next week to actually start banging away and doing the thing. So we're going to give that a try. Anyways, it is episode 13. And I mentioned last week that I had the happy privilege of heading up to Minneapolis last weekend. If I have any time after we're finished talking, I'll tell you about that. I had a great trip. It was really, really fun. But I have been running long on these episodes, so we'll just get right to it. And if I run out of time on the end, then I'll tell you about my trip to Minneapolis. One of the things that I am going to pay a bit more attention to is I've been listening to this back. I've been thinking, you say you know a lot, and you need to stop doing that. So I am going to try to pay a little more attention to that. Who knows, in the future, someone may start one of those drinking games every time you say, I know. So for the hope and health of all my listeners, I will do my best not to say you know so much, unless I intend to. Anyways, I've been thinking about a topic for the last several weeks, and it actually, well, I've thought about this topic for many, many, many years, but I started thinking about it again in conjunction with a vacation that my wife and I took a couple of weeks ago when we went down to Branson. I was walking around again outside, and we were just talking about this, that, and the other, and this general topic came up again. And then in conjunction with that, I mentioned that I had seen Project Natal, which is Microsoft's new non-controller, makes you the controller, your body is the controller thing, which is extremely cool. But it does have some interesting ramifications that I've thought about. And so sort of in preparation for how do we deal in the virtual world, I thought it would probably be good if we just kind of reviewed a little bit about our life in the natural world. Because if you really don't have a good perspective on what your life should be in the natural world, it's easy for the flesh to kind of lead you down some odd paths. But before we actually talk about any of that, of course, we really have to establish what your fundamental and philosophical bent is when it comes to the natural world. Because if you've lived any time at all and taken any science courses, you will know that there are some fairly disparate opinions about how the natural world got here. And these really do end up shaping what we think we can learn and observe from in the natural world and what the value of those observations are. If you know anything about me at all, you know that I definitely believe in a master architect. I do not believe that life was the result of some undesigned random chance, but that all that we see here on Earth was the direct result of God designing things. Whether you agree with that is fine, and you are certainly more than welcome to form whatever opinions you wish to form about the natural world, because that is your right and your privilege as someone who has free will. But for me, this idea of a master architect really has some great benefit, Because when I look around, it is no longer just spontaneous random chance that's causing things. Things were built the way they are built for a reason. And there are things that I can learn from simply observing. This idea of observing nature and not just extracting what is the natural processes so that we can mimic them, but rather extracting lessons from the natural world. I mean, this is as old as people sitting around campfires looking at stuff. You know, I mean, there's plenty of places in the Old Testament. Solomon, for example, where it talks about Solomon, how he observed things and wrote things down and made proverbs out of them, and he was congratulated for doing this. And we really can find some very interesting things about how we should conduct our lives simply by looking around. You may recall that there is a proverb, I think it starts in Proverbs 6:6, where it says to the sluggard, go look at the ant and take a lesson from the ant. It doesn't have any commander, it doesn't have any overseer or ruler, yet it figures out that it should store provisions in summer and it gathers food at harvest at the right time. You know, so this, it's, oh, rats, see, I did it. Arrgh, I gotta watch that. Anyways, yeah, this is gonna be hard for me because I am so used to doing this. Anyways, what we can do is as we move through life and experience things in life, we can actually pick up things about life that we can then map into how do I change my behavior. One of the things, and I have a lot of examples of them in the book Still Whispers, which is available off the website for a free PDF download. You can just download if you want to. I mean, one of the examples that I talk about in the book is this idea that things take time to grow. That if you're a farmer, you really do not expect to wander out into your field, throw some seed in the ground, wander back, come back 2 hours later, and ta-da, harvest time. No, that's not the way it works. You prepare the ground, you sow the seed, you cultivate, you weed, maybe you fertilize a little bit. Eventually, you get around to, hey, it's time to have a harvest. That is, if you don't have a rat attack that kills your harvest, which is a special that I was watching on Nova one day. Oh, man. I'm going to work that in at some point, the whole deal, but never mind. So the idea is that things take time to grow. You can see this in the natural world. And if you observe that in the natural world and you believe that things are designed in the natural world to teach us about life, what we then is can map that back into our lives and say, well, you know what? If I'm learning a new skill, if I'm in a new business adventure, if I'm trying to pick up a new hobby, things take time to grow. So I'm not going to expect just out of the gate, I'm going to know everything there is to know about everything. I'm actually going to be kind to myself and leave myself some opportunity to grow. And the first time through I try something, and the second time through, and the third time through, you know, maybe I won't be that good at it. But as I go along, I will gain skills, I will become better, and maybe at some point I'll actually be able to get a harvest off this. I was just talking to a buddy today. He has a business opportunity that's coming up. Looks like it might be a great business opportunity for him. And he was kind of just bouncing it off me and saying, yeah, this is one of the things I'm thinking about now, and just kind of giving me an overview of it was. And my response to him immediately, I said, well, first of all, it sounds very intriguing. Sounds like it really has some possibilities. The observations that I gave him was, first of all, you know the guy who would be your business partner in this, and you know what his patterns of work are, and you know what his morals are, and that's a plus. But I said, second of all, this is in an area that you have been in for years and years and years. You know what your skill set is. When you estimate the amount of time things are going to take, you're going to have that down. You've been down this road before. You've made some mistakes. You've learned from those mistakes. So what has grown in his life is this particular ability for this particular business opportunity. And I'm far more comfortable telling him, yeah, that seems like a good idea, if it's something that he's been doing. Buddy and I, who had a business together years ago, we used to have a little saying, there ain't no substitute for doing it. You know, I'm much more comfortable working with somebody who's actually done what we're trying to accomplish before, as opposed to us sitting around going, yeah, we think we can pull that off. That can't be that hard, you know. See, I did it again. I'm trying to work on that. Anyways, so one of the proverbs is, things take time to grow. You can observe that from nature. You get that. But fully related to that is a thought that I had several months ago. What is the fundamental quality of life? By looking around at nature, I can look around at nature and go, you know, I meant to say that one. You know, you know, the fundamental quality of life is that it grows. And if you look at your own life and you see yourself stuck in a rut or stuck going through the same processes over and over, and if there isn't growth, then maybe you need to figure out why things aren't alive in you and figure out what you can do to get them to be alive. Because life and growth go hand in hand. And there are other things that we can observe in nature. And this is actually the comment that I made to my wife that spawned me thinking about this whole area again. We were talking about this area of living in the natural world and what we can learn from the natural world. And she had brought up, I think it was a friend who, a close, you know, spouse or something had died. And it'd taken them a while to move through that and to, you know, start moving on with their life. And I said, you know, sweetie, the fact of it is wounds take time to heal. It just takes time. We see that in our own bodies. When we have a physical cut, we don't expect just to wake up the next morning and go, ta-da, there it is, gone. I mean, we expect that there will be a process of healing. And there's a whole lot of little corollaries that you can pull off of this. If you look down and it's all red and there's pus coming out of it, then you need to do something to help that. Just like if you have an emotional wound and it's not really in sealing up over time and you don't feel like you're making progress against that, you know, you need to talk to somebody. You need to move forward. Do the things that you can do to get that thing cleaned out and give it a chance to start healing up. But expect that wound, if it's an emotional wound, is going to take a little bit of time to heal, because that's what happens in the natural world. And we can look to the natural world for examples of how things move forward in our lives. I mean, one of the examples that I came up with the other day when I was just thinking about the effort that's required in life is that life is not all downhill with guardrails. You know, all you have to do, all you have to do is go out for a run on anything but a completely flat surface, and you figure out very quickly that life is not all downhill. Sometimes you got to put a little effort into moving yourself up the hill. Then it's fun when you actually crest it and you get to run downhill for a little bit. That's a hoot. But you just don't expect to be able to do that all the time. So if you find yourself sitting around going, I don't know why I just can't make it, it's so hard. Okay, well, life's hard. Sometimes you just gotta take the hill. Beyond just plain observation, however, is this idea of moving beyond observation and truly latching on and kind of exploring behind the curtain a little bit. I love to do this, just mind games of thinking about, you know, doing thought experiments, thinking about why are things built the way they're built. And I've found there's been a couple of different things that, I mean, it really has helped me out. For instance, in the book, I talk about male and female. Why are male and female built male and female? And I'm not going to rehash the whole chapter that's in the book, because I don't frankly have the time to do that, and you should just download the book and read it, because there's lots of other good stuff in the book and you might enjoy it. Male and female, just the synopsis is the reason God made male and female is because he wanted to place an example here on earth that we could not get away from to show us the relationship that he wanted to have with his creation. And while we as humans seem to make every effort to obscure that relationship and obscure the wonder that can be in that relationship by having men act like jerks and, you know, women running around having affairs. I mean, we're both sides of the equation, male and female. We're guilty of not really making the union work as well as it could. But when you think about how wonderful the union can be between male and female, how wonderful marriage can be when you've got two people who are absolutely dedicated to each other and who are doing what they can to assist the other person to fulfill their epics and quests in life, that's a really wonderful relationship. And God gave us that relationship of male and female. I firmly believe he designed it that way so that we would understand what he wants in a relationship with us. So that's an example where you can look in nature, maybe not the initial observation, but you can say, well, let's kind of look behind the scenes a little bit and see what's here. The other example that I was thinking about this week in preparation for doing this is this whole idea of life not being very convenient. I mean, another term for life not being very convenient is toil. And for those of you who are of a Christian mindset, when I say toil, your mind immediately goes back to Garden of Eden. That God cursed the earth, he hardened the earth so that we would have to toil. Now, the easiest thing to pull out of that on top is, well, God's punishing us. He's made our lives hard. Why does life have to be so hard? But, sorry, that was an underbreath, you know. But I will get this eventually. But I think there's a deeper lesson that we can learn out of the story of the Garden of Eden beyond just God is seeking to whap us over the head and make our lives miserable, so he made life here on the earth require toil. And that deeper lesson is, what would our lives be like if we didn't have toil in them? I don't think that's too hard to answer, because there are a few, and I purposefully do not call them the lucky few, but there are a few in this life who have not had, at least when it comes to monetary terms, any worry about toil. And most of the time, when you see those people, I would not say that they have a high propensity to have interesting and great lives, because when you have everything provided for you, it has a tendency to feed your flesh. I just had a conversation with my daughter this morning. She and my wonderful son-in-law have been off on a cruise. They're now driving back, plan to be back in this evening. Well, tomorrow morning early, it's a long drive. And we were talking about their cruise and how it was going. We were just jabbering away. And at one point, I said, yeah, sweetie, those cruise ships, those are amazing things. Man, you talk about comfort, convenience, and everybody taking care of you. It's great. I said, but can you imagine the type of person that you would turn into if every day, every day, every day, that's what you had? You wake up, people make your bed for you, you waltz down, people have made breakfast for you, all sorts of delights to tantalize your palate. There's activities every day to keep you entertained. There are excursions to go out and let you see things that you haven't seen before. And then you come back and eat more food and go to other activities and come back and eat more food. And she said, oh yeah, she said, that would not be good. Because I'm convinced that if we were completely released from toil in our lives, that unless we had a strong sense of the interaction between flesh and spirit, that the flesh would just destroy us. And in fact, if you'll just look around in America, where there are many things that are far more convenient than they are in other countries, if you will just look around, you will see the effect that convenience can have. At any time someone gets the slightest bit inconvenienced, it's like, well, I don't know where they're at. I mean, and it tries to, you know, raise itself up in me. I was over helping a customer Wednesday night. We had to be outside. And it was hot. It was just plain hot. And as my flesh was going, I don't understand. It's so hot. Okay. I thought to myself, you know what? This is the way it is outside. Sometimes it gets hot outside. God gave us sweat glands. Sweating is good. Sweating stinks sometimes, but sweating is good. So I'm just going to celebrate sweating. And I will sweat. And I did. And we actually got at least enough steps along that he was able to go ahead and solve his problem. I'm hitting my gravel drive. Now then, so we can observe things that are in the natural world and gain wisdom from them. We can sort of go beyond observation to try to connect whatever we choose for our words of inspiration in our life, either the Bible or whatever, and say, okay, if there's a master architect and he designed this, then why did he design this beyond just what I see? We can pursue a deeper understanding. But I think there's also an important exercise that we need to go through in terms of synchronizing our lives with the natural world. Of understanding that the natural world is built for a purpose, that we are built in a certain way, and we can create an environment of success for ourselves by synchronizing ourselves with the way the master architect did things. Now, I'm just amazed at the number of people, and again, all I'm telling you is what I think. I'm getting my mail. All I'm telling you is what I think. This is my opinion. You can live your life any way you want to live your life. But I'm just amazed at the number of people in life, you know, who seem to think that it's no big deal. They can completely ignore the natural world and its consequences, and yet everything is supposed to be great for them. I mean, I'm treading on thin ice here because there's some people who are very close to me who have made these kind of statements, but I'm going to make it anyways. You know, people who say, well, I'm just not a morning person. I just can't get up in the morning. I just can't do it. You know, my thought is, okay, God made night and day for a purpose. So you can decide whether or not you think night and day applies to you or whether or not you should just completely ignore the fact that there's night and day and ignore the fact that probably what the purpose of night and day is that when it gets to be night, you go to bed. And when it gets to be day, you get up. One of the real benefits for this, if you're trying to work on a team, is that if you can get everybody synchronized on the team, you work a whole lot better together. And most people get synchronized on the team during the day. You know, so if you're If you're a person who is the type of person who says, oh, I'm not a morning person, maybe you should really reconsider that. Because maybe you could be a morning person if you just started getting a decent night's rest and synchronizing yourself with the world. There's another major area that I consider in this whole area of synchronizing with the natural world, and that's in the area of food. Oh, now I've gone to meddling. Yes, I have. And again, I respect your right to make whatever kind of choice you want to make in life. But the fact is, your body is designed for a certain type of food. Whether you believe in evolution or whether you believe in a master architect, your body is designed for the food this world produces. So you can either eat that world Or you can eat food that's been taken out of the natural world and mashed into a pulp, or pulverized to make it more tender, or slathered with fat, or salt, or sugar, and stuff that stuff into you. But if you do that, you can expect that it's going to have consequences because your body is not tuned to work on that type of nutrition. And I use the word generously. Your body is tuned to be synchronized with the natural world, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, you know, good proteins in beans and lentils and fish and those kinds of things. I mean, this is exactly what all the nutritionists are going to tell you. And they're telling you that because it works and because that's the way God designed it in the real world. When I can actually get somebody to sign on to this program with me, it's just amazing to see the results. I have a buddy who's been wrestling with weight issues for years. And I've been trying to encourage him. Several weeks ago, he had another setback and that kind of stuff. And we went out to eat. I said, look, man. And he actually told me, he said, I think I'm ready to kind of do your way of doing it. And I actually misunderstood. What he was really saying is, I'm ready to do more fruits and vegetable. I thought what he was saying is, I'm ready to do good eats in Eden. And I think I've mentioned good eats in Eden before, but basically good eats in Eden is you eat stuff for 10 days and all you eat is stuff that is packaged in the natural world in the form it's packaged in the natural world. You eat raw fruit, you eat raw vegetables, you eat raw nuts, you drink water. That's it. You don't cook anything. You just eat what God made. In that 10 days, he lost like 14 pounds. Now, that's way too fast for weight loss. You know, but I almost let it out there that, you know, I caught it. But he suddenly saw something different. And I told him when he was doing this, the great thing about this is you don't have to count calories. You just eat because it's self-regulating. About the time you try to eat that fifth apple, you'll slow down. You know, you will. You'll eat walnuts for a long time or raw almonds, whatever, and you'll get to the place where you go, I'm done with that. I'm done. And he has actually been doing real well with it. Now he kind of fell off the bandwagon a couple of days ago, but he's getting back on. But the more he's in it, the more it's transforming him. The more it's lifting his energy level. And he told me a story just recently that I was so pleased to hear. He said that his wife had told him, next time you get together with Phil, tell him what a difference this has made in my life. Because his wife was having all kinds of digestive problems, and she went away to be with her folks for a week. And he did this with her gone, and she came back. She saw his energy level improved. She saw that he had lost 14 pounds. I mean, she could see the difference on his face, his complexion, everything. And, of course, she said, what have you been doing? And he sat down with her and talked to her about it. And she started down this path as well. She said, I've prayed about it. I think that's something I'd like to try. And it has made a world of difference in her digestive problems. And I'm not going to go into the digestive problems in details, but suffice it to say, it has changed her whole outlook when she started just cutting out a lot of that processed stuff. And that's not due to any great wisdom on my part. It's just due to the fact that we recognize that the world is designed, that we are designed, that we live in a natural world, that we should make observations from it, learn what we can from it, and synchronize ourselves with it. And in so doing, we create an environment of success for ourselves. And that's about as simple as it gets. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.